Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation sits at the intersection of law, leadership, and the structures that influence how we live and work. We are living in an era where questions around fairness, accountability, and responsibility are becoming increasingly complex, and it is more important than ever to understand how the systems around us are designed and who they are designed for. Today's guest brings both depth and authority to this space. Elaine Banton is a barrister specialising in employment, equality, discrimination and human rights law. Her work spans complex, high-value and high-profile litigation, often where law, power and institutional fairness intersect. Alongside her legal practice, she is actively involved in governance, AI ethics and public accountability, contributing to conversations that are shaping the future of work and decision making. Elaine, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Now, Elaine, will you start off by telling us about your work and how it sits at the intersection of law, fairness, and structural change? What first drew you into this area of practice?
What drew me to practice as a barrister was the fact that I grew up on a council estate in Hackney, and from the age of 7, I knew that I wanted to become a barrister. I knew I wanted to go to the bar because I was fascinated by fairness and by voice. And the defining moment came for me probably when I was about 13, because my mother was a nurse and she used to go on strike, and I recall watching her on television even with the banner, you know, and being really proud. And she would go on strike for better conditions. And I actually helped her with her own regrading exercise because she was carrying out the job of a much more senior nurse, but not being paid at that level. So I helped her with her regrading exercise and we won. She was regraded and I helped some of her colleagues as well. And I remember how much that moment meant to her, not just in practical terms, but in how she was more valued in her work. And when I look back on that moment, it was my first employment law victory.
Well,
and it really underscored for me how work, dignity and health and justice are deeply connected.
And that's amazing. And that, thank you for sharing that. That's a very powerful reflection. And what stands out is how early that sense of fairness and giving people a voice was present in your life, and how that experience with your mother clearly shaped the direction you went in. I think that's an amazing story. The way you've described, the way it makes you feel, is very real, I think, and not just in terms of the outcome, but the outcome is phenomenal. That's amazing you won. I think that's brilliant. But in the impact it had on how valued she felt as well. And it also highlights how those early personal experiences can lay the foundation for a much wider professional purpose, a very meaningful insight. So thank you for sharing that. And you've worked on high profile cases involving equality and discrimination. What patterns do you most often see in how these issues show up in the workplace?
Yes, that's a really interesting question. I think the recurring pattern that I often see, and I'm becoming more and more aware of it, is how often organizations individualize what are actually structural problems. So for example, someone might be labeled difficult or underperforming or not resilient enough or not yet leadership material, when in truth, what's often going on is that the issue is lying behind the design of the system. You might have opaque criteria, inconsistent decision making, unchecked bias or poor management, or even a failure to understand health and live reality. And a simple example might be is where someone has been off sick on disability related absence for, you know, an extended period of time, and then there's an automated system at play and it just moves them to nil pay, and there's not been any proper discussion beforehand to at least ensure they're supported or at least aware of the situation that might happen.
It's very clear and very insightful explanation that you've given, and what stands out for me is how often issues are framed as individual shortcomings when in reality they are rooted in the way systems are designed and managed. And the example you've given makes that very tangible, particularly around how processes can overlook the realities that people experience in their lives. And I think especially in relation to health and disability, it really highlights the importance of looking beyond the individual and examining the structures in place. So you've spoken about frameworks needing to be designed to deliver fairness, not just respond to harm. What does that look like in practice for you?
I talk about is the fact that, you know, what we should be doing is designing systems that actually ask the right questions at the start, and not this reactive model of justice, which is, you know, actually reacting to the damage after it's been done. So what we need to think about is who might be disadvantaged by this particular process. Let's interrogate what assumptions might be embedded in the process. Is it transparent? Could decisions be challenged? Are the outcomes monitored? And in my approach, which I adopt, which is equality by design, it rests on three pillars: design, transparency, and accountability. And I believe fundamentally that justice should not begin after harm. It should be built into systems from the outset. And I really think that one of the problems that we have is that if we don't really think about these things more intentionally, then we are doing ourselves a grave injustice. Those structures, I think that we have a lot of them that don't do enough to embed the fairness within, are flawed. And using the language of inclusion doesn't save people from harm. Harm isn't prevented by that. And in fact, we are moving to a time where the harm could be built in or actually repeated at scale. And I think it's fundamental to take note of the fact that inclusion fails when systems are designed for the ideal worker rather than real human beings.
Absolutely. And such a valuable point again. And thank you once again for sharing that, because that's very clear and thought-provoking. What I feel your emphasis is on is moving away from a reactive approach to justice and instead of embedding fairness into systems from the very beginning. I think the way you've outlined those pillars, it was design, transparency and accountability, makes the concept very practical and grounded. And it's also, I think what you're highlighting is the risk of relying on language alone without addressing the structures themselves and how they can allow harm to continue to even be repeated at scale. And a very important and timely, again, perspective, especially with the systems we have in place with AI and everything else that's going on. It's moving very rapidly as well, and it's difficult, I find, for people to keep up with these challenges. So how much of the challenges we see today are about individual behavior versus the environments people are operating within?
Absolutely. So individual behavior matters, and that's absolutely right, but behavior is shaped and rewarded by systems. If a structure that we have tolerates opacity and punishes disclosure or rewards conformity to a narrow norm, the harm will keep reducing itself. And, you know, focusing on individuals can be comforting because it actually avoids the deeper work of redesigning. But I really advocate for the fact that the most lasting change comes when institutions examine the architecture in place and not just the actors.
That's a very clear and balanced way of putting it. What stands out is your recognition that while individual behavior does matter, it's ultimately shaped by the systems people are operating within. The way you've explained how certain structures can reward conformity or discourage openness makes that very tangible, and it also highlights the importance of looking beyond individuals and focusing on the underlying framework, which is where more meaningful and lasting change can take place. A very important perspective. Once again, thank you so much so far, Elaine, for your valuable insights. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the amazing Elaine Banton as we explore fairness, accountability, and the structures shaping the modern workspace. Welcome back, Elaine.
Nice to be back.
Now, Elaine, you are also involved in AI governance and algorithmic bias. For someone listening who may not fully understand algorithmic bias, how would you explain it in everyday world or life and what impact it makes?
Absolutely. So algorithmic bias means that it's what happens basically where you've got a system that appears objective, but it ends up reproducing old inequalities. So it's based on the data that you put into the system. Mm-hmm. If that data is biased, it's likely to produce a biased outcome. So it replicates the same bias. So in simple terms, if you train technology on biased patterns or ask it the wrong question, it may deliver discriminatory results, all the while appearing neutral. So a person might be screened out or downrated or treated as higher risk not because the technology is intelligent, but because the underlying system has inherited human blind spots.
Oh, wow. Thank you for explaining that. So when you have the AI governance and algorithmic bias, how concerned should people be about how decisions are being made by automated processes?
We should be attentive to the situation, but it's not a fatalistic situation. So we've got to be careful, we've got to be monitoring. So automated systems, they can absolutely make decisions faster and at a greater scale. And that can be helpful. You know, that's true. There's no getting away from that. But that also means that if there is bias, that can be replicated faster and at greater scale. So, for example, you're not just harming an individual, but you might be disproportionately harming all women or disabled people. So if flawed assumptions or incomplete data sit underneath those tools, the result is not neutral. It's actually automated unfairness. And the key to this is responsible governance, transparency, and human oversight.
Again, very clear explanation given there, so thank you for that. Because what's standing out for me is, while these systems can bring speed and efficiency, they also have the potential to repeat bias at a much larger scale, which is quite frightening, actually. And if they're not properly managed, of course, that can be quite detrimental. Then the way you've described it makes it easy to see how the impact can go beyond individuals and affect whole groups of people. And it really underlines the importance of having strong governance. And I like that you've said the transparency, because especially with human oversight in place, I think people can become lazy in the systems as well. I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but I think we can become quite dependent on these systems. And when we're not overlooking them or practicing using them in a way that is transparent, that is without making any assumptions that the outcome's going to be accurate, then of course we need that human oversight in place. It needs this information you're sharing is so important. It's important for people to actually be aware of the law, the policy and governance in place. But how important is it for these areas to work together rather than in isolation?
So crucial. First of all, one of the things we need to think about is, as we are moving to a more automated, a more AI adopting society, we actually need to ensure that we are training, you know, the next generation of computer scientists, experts, all of those people at the forefront of technology. In their courses, we need to ensure that they're being trained on equality, discrimination, and bias. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really essential. Now, on your question, I also think that, you know, we have to break it down a little bit. Yes. So the law provides rights and remedies. The policy provides operational direction, and governance gives us the oversight and accountability. Now, that's all well and good. However, if those three operate in silos, organizations can drift into inconsistency and risk. But when we have law, policy, and governance working together, you can create systems that are not only lawful, but they'll be fair, intelligible, and sustainable.
And I'm really liking the fact that you have broken that down for people to understand that it's important for those elements to work together, but rather than in isolation. But the way you've described it highlights how alignment creates consistency and reduces the risk, while also supporting that fairness and clarity in practice. And educating people about that is so important. And in your experience, what does accountability really look like when something goes wrong at an organizational or institutional level?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, real accountability is not just identifying a mistake after the event. That's an important aspect of it, but it's not the whole thing. It's also understanding how the mistake became possible. How did it manifest? And that means transparency about the decision making, the routes for challenge, willingness to review outcomes, and leadership that is prepared to learn rather than merely defend. And quite often you find that organizational structures go into a defense mode without really interrogating, how did we get there? What can we learn from it? I believe accountability is a number of things, but it's also cultural, procedural, and structural.
Absolutely. And I think that's a very valid point where people do have to take that accountability on board. And I think focusing on understanding how issues arise in anything really in everyday life is a very important point, not just responding to them afterwards. And the importance of openness in any organization is also very important. Ownership, accountability, as you said, and learning and having that willingness to learn and to reflect rather than simply defending those decisions. It's a very thoughtful and important perspective to have, but as technology continues to shape the workplace, what risks do you think organizations are currently underestimating, and what impact is this having on well-being?
I think many organizations are underestimating the well-being impact of constant measurement, surveillance-style productivity tools, and opaque performance systems, as well as insensitive health decision making. And I'll give you an example of that. The up and out processes or pyramid structures that many large consultancies or partnerships employ are susceptible to utilization as a blunt tool. And by that I mean they don't always accommodate the human aspects. Mm-hmm. So if you are disabled, you're unwell, you've had an operation, you've been off sick, and you haven't met the metrics for promotion, you could potentially be dismissed. And that is a harsh intersect unless there is a system of fairness and equality that's built in that process. And I think people nowadays can live under a low but continuous pressure of being assessed by systems they don't fully understand.
Yes.
You know, there's so much opacity and they can't really effectively challenge it. And that will erode trust, confidence, and well-being over a period of time.
So true. And it's quite frightening for a lot of people, I think, as well. I think the impact these systems can have on people's well-being, particularly when they lack that transparency and don't take individual circumstances into account. And the way you've described it, it highlights how ongoing pressure and lack of clarity can affect trust and confidence over time. It's such an important and thoughtful perspective. So thank you so much, Elaine. We're going to take another short commercial break. With a word from our sponsors, stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I'm in conversation with the incredible Elaine Banton, discussing fairness, governance, and the future of work. Welcome back, Elaine.
Thank you so much.
Now, you've been recognised for your work in equality and leadership. What does effective leadership look like to you in today's world?
Fantastic question, Belinda.
Thank you.
I think effective leadership today requires a number of factors: moral clarity and not just technical competence. It means being able to hold complexity and listen, really listen seriously, fair decisions under pressure, and to understand fundamentally that well-being, dignity and trust are not soft issues. They're central to performance and legitimacy. And I really think that the best leaders understand that fairness is part of and should be part of the infrastructure.
Absolutely. And I think it, again, such a valued point. And I'm so glad I'm having this conversation with you, because I think it would really resonate with a lot of listeners. And I think that moral clarity alongside technical competence is such an important point and really needs to be emphasized, and the ability to lead with that fairness, even in complex situations. I believe where you've highlighted yet again the well-being, dignity and trust are not secondary. They should be primary, but also central to strong leadership and effective performance. So thank you for sharing that, because many professionals, they operate under pressure, don't they? And while they try to navigate complex environments. So in your opinion, how can individuals maintain clarity and integrity within those systems?
Yes, it's a good point as well. I think the first thing is to stay close to your values. Second, understand that confusion is often a feature of dysfunctional systems. It's not necessarily a personal failing. Thirdly, I would say by documenting carefully, seeking trusted support, and refusing to internalize every organizational distortion or failing as truth. Because I think integrity often begins with naming clearly what you're experiencing and having the courage to really expansively look at that and think deeply about it.
Yes, and I feel, again, what you're highlighting is very thoughtful, and a very thoughtful way of putting it, because it's a reminder that inclusion issues are not always personal, but often reflect wider organisational challenges. But do you think enough is being done to protect these individuals from discrimination and bias, or is there still a significant gap?
Progress has certainly been made. And I can see that there's, you know, when I look back over my career, I see progress coming in changes in culture and dynamics. However, there remains a significant gap between formal commitment and the actual lived reality. Many people still encounter systems that are technically compliant on paper, but experienced as unfair in practice. The challenge, I think, now is to move from the reactive model, the one where we fix harm after the event, mainly, ostensibly, to one where we can be more intentional in embedding fairness and equality into the system's architecture.
And again, a valued point there, because addressing a situation before it occurs, you're already solving so many issues there, I feel. And what you're doing, it really brings into focus the need to move beyond reacting to the problems and instead building, as you said, the fairness into the systems from the outset, really. And when you look ahead, Elaine, and looking ahead, what changes do you believe, apart from what you just shared, are necessary to create more balanced and fair frameworks, both legally and culturally?
So, I mean, this is a really good point as well. Fundamentally, people need to know their rights in order to even assert them. Need strong rights literacy. We also need, as I've said before, better institutional design.
Yes.
As fundamental, more transparent decision making, and serious attention to the impacts of AI. I think governance structures that are willing to examine outcomes rather than intentions alone. And culturally, we also need to stop treating fairness as an optional extra or a nice add-on. It's absolutely foundational.
Yes. And finally, Elaine, if there is one message you would want listeners to take away about fairness, accountability, and the future of work, what would that be?
I think one of the overarching themes that I am discussing more and more is that people, individuals, should not have to break before systems respond. The reactive model of fixing harm after the event is outdated. Now more than ever with AI, we are in a time when we have the propensity for the harm to be replicated at scale. And we also have redress taking years and years to be effective, and all too often at great cost, emotional, financial, well-being. Justice shouldn't depend on resilience of individuals to have the finances and the resilience, the resources to fight for years and years. I believe that the future of work must be built on dignity, transparency, and accountability, because fairness should not be a luxury. It's actually the foundation of trust, well-being, and progress.
And that's a beautiful message to end on. Elaine, thank you for joining us today and for bringing such clarity and depth to the conversation that affects so many people. And this has been a powerful and important discussion. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. So Elaine, where can our listeners find you if they wanted to connect with you?
Yes, well, I am on LinkedIn and also Instagram. I've got a Chambers website as well, so you can find me quite easily, I think.
That's great. Thank you so much. And if today's conversation resonated with you or gave you a different way of thinking about the structures around you, do share this conversation with others. And to close today's show, we're going to finish with a song, A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.